We are back with another AmeriCorps Connections interview with an AmeriCorps alumni. Welcome to AmeriCorps Connections, where we catch up with AmeriCorps alum to reflect on their service term and to find out what they are up to now. Really, we hear about the twists and the turns of the service year. We learn about the synchronicities where they didn't know somebody was going to connect them to something else later in their life, or twofold partnerships, things happen during the service year. So I'm Nikki Fiacco, and I am a proud AmeriCorps alum from Volunteer, Maryland. So I just wanted to keep these connections going. And that's why I started the AmeriCorps Connections podcast. You know, we are 1.2 million AmeriCorps alum strong, and it may only be one connection at a time on the AmeriCorps Connections podcast, but I feel like it's really important to just hear our voices and come together. And people have already seen each other in the 3D. And some of my AmeriCorps or my interviewees were able to participate on a panel with Service Year Alliance and the AmeriCorps Agency and America Service Commission. So you never know what you're going to get yourself into if you're on the podcast. So before I introduce our very special guest, I want to give a shout out to Den Medivier from Time and Money, Time or Money Productions. He provided hosting and production consulting for this AmeriCorps Connections podcast. And this is how and why, if you found this in Apple Tunes, no, I always say the wrong thing, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Thank you, Dan, for getting us on all of the platforms. And Dan is an NCCC alum. And we have a very special guest today. We have Sharon Hooksbury Bloom, who is the founder and CEO of two businesses. This woman is very busy. Founder and CEO of Bloom Facilitation and also Do Good, Be Good. Buy the merch. She's wearing the shirt. And I also want to say Sharon is, her and her team are supporting the AmeriCorps podcast, AmeriCorps Connections podcast, through editing and back-end services and marketing. So we're really hoping that with this, we'll be able to grow the podcast and have other speakers and just really get momentum going. So thank you, Sharon. Thank you to your team. Thank you, Do Good, Be Good. Check out all their consulting stuff and support them and the podcast. So Sharon, I'm super excited to have you here today because we're kicking off a special recruitment series. I don't know if you all know this, but it's the end of April, May, and this is top AmeriCorps program recruitment. So for the next couple of weeks, we're going to highlight different programs from AmeriCorps alums. That is the caveat. Everybody will be an AmeriCorps alum. And we're going to learn about their journey, and then they're going to share their AmeriCorps opportunity, their program, and we're going to see if we can generate some buzz and improve and increase some recruitment, and hopefully the podcast will help with that. And Sharon, we have you on today because you're an AmeriCorps alum, number one, that's super important, and number two, Do Good, Be Good has some products that could help programs with their recruitment. So we're going to talk about that after we hear about your service journey. So Sharon, I'm going to stop talking for a minute. Please take it away. How did you get into AmeriCorps? What was your journey like?
Thank you, Nikki, for having me. I am honored to be here. And yes, it was a while ago that I joined AmeriCorps. I have a fairly typical story in terms of the fact that I went to college and then after college, didn't know what I wanted to do next. And I was in Virginia. So I grew up in Virginia. And I graduated from James Madison University with a history degree, but didn't have any particular idea of what I was going to do with that. And really, because I didn't know where I wanted to work, I ended up moving to Arizona because that's where my boyfriend at the time lived. And when I told the story at the time, I definitely didn't say that I was moving to be with my boyfriend because I'm an independent woman who wouldn't do that sort of thing. I also fell in love
with
what
love makes us do.
Yeah. So I wasn't the only reason. I was in love with the town as well, Flagstaff, Arizona, which is now my adopted home. I've stayed here. I had been out here twice before that. So by the time I graduated from James Madison, I was like looking for a new home and a new job and a new life. I decided to try out my life in Flagstaff. So moved to Flagstaff, Arizona, had a history degree, So I did what I think maybe other AmeriCorps leaning people would do, which is that I looked for places to volunteer since I was in a new town and wanted to use my new skills. So I volunteered at a museum. And while I was there, I was looking around, looking for jobs, you know, so I was thinking, could I work here at the museum? But I didn't actually really like the jobs there. It was sort of like, oh no, I don't think I wanted to have this kind of job. And the only job that seemed really interesting to me was the volunteer coordinator's job. And so Diana was her name. And I asked her, I said, how do you get into doing that kind of work? And so she was the one that first told me about AmeriCorps. And she said, they're hiring right now. You should go to their office. I think it was probably in the spring. So, you know, key to our recruitment message right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. And so luckily I listened and I went over there, and sure enough, they had some positions open. I interviewed for a few and I ended up serving at Senior Services, and that was housed in the county. So it was local government based, and I was serving homebound seniors and disabled adults in a new, the program wasn't new, but they were trying to expand what they were doing in terms of being able to serve people more, because right now they were doing it all with staff and they were doing it with case manager support. Mm-hmm. And every case manager was totally overloaded. They had no time to just do what they would call friendly visiting. So mm-hmm. they had this idea of maybe we could get an AmeriCorps member and we could recruit volunteers and they would go and they would combat loneliness amongst, you know, the elderly homebound population. So that was my main goal as an AmeriCorps member.
Yeah. And it sounds like it was just serendipitous that like that person, as I find it cool that you were drawn to volunteer coordination and then that individual was able to connect you with AmeriCorps, because that's not always the case, right? Like, and that's one of the reasons this podcast exists, is like, let's get the word out that this AmeriCorps, this program is here and it's available for people of all ages, right? And it's interesting that you went into a program for seniors, because like, it didn't sound like through that journey that that was something that you were kind of angling at or interested in. What was it about that program and working with seniors that made it stand above some of the other opportunities that you interviewed for?
Yeah, I remember that I interviewed at a few places. And so, you know, it was late in the season, if you will, for hiring. So I had a few choices, but I wasn't choosing between everything, you know, and I knew I wanted to be in town. So I was really choosing between just a few different options, but they were really different. I think I interviewed also at a literacy center and also with a program that would do more fundraising and event management for a nonprofit. So I think of those three, I was drawn towards local government. My mm-hmm. parents worked at the federal government and they met while working for the federal government. And my grandparents worked for the federal government and my great grandmother worked for the federal government. So I joke that public service is sort of the family business, you know?
Yeah.
So that was comfortable for me going into a public sector role.
Mm-hmm.
Seniors in particular, I didn't have any direct experience, but I liked the idea of organizing, coordinating things. I had done some in high school, really more in high school than anything else. I was the leader of a club and I was on student government, you know, so being in charge of basically recruiting and managing volunteers, but we didn't call it that because it was recruiting and managing other students. But
yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, there's a couple of things to pull out here, not just on your journey, but as we're starting this special series of recruitment, like, I don't know, folks, if you listen to Sharon, she had different opportunities, like from all spectrums, right? Like, maybe we can do fundraising and grant writing. Maybe we can do something with seniors. Maybe we can do something. And so that's, I think that is the power of AmeriCorps as well. It's like, what do I want to experience? You know, it's funny. One of my very first interviews was with Gia she has a compound last name and I can't remember what it was. But anyways, she said that she did NCCC and then she deliberately wanted to do VISTA because she wanted a different experience and she wanted to understand the administrative part of it. And I think that's amazing that you can go through this program and you can it's like choose your own adventure, right? Like, how cool is that? And then once you get your foot in the door, it's just, as you know, because you do consulting in the industry, it's such a niche industry and you can bop around to different opportunities. So it's so cool to hear like how people's stories started. So how did your service year go? What were some of the highs and what, let's do rose, thorn, and leaf. So what is it called?
Rose, thorn, and bud, I think.
Yes, rose, thorn, and bud, or maybe rose and thorn.
Yeah, well, something that I, looking back, I realize was a really great fit for me was the fact that it was a new program. You know, it was an established department, you know, so there was stability in the organization, but they were creating something brand new. And now as an entrepreneur, like I realize that that's one of my skills. It's one of my sweet spots is like, I love starting things and creating things that weren't there before. So also my supervisor gave me a lot of autonomy in terms of bringing my own creativity to it.
That's
so
huge.
Yeah. So for instance, you know, the main goal I had was to recruit community volunteers to serve homebound elderly adults. That was the main population we served. So we needed about, if I remember correctly, it was like around 50 volunteers was our goal. And, you know, I started off just sort of advertising like you do, learned a lot about marketing, trying to just kind of haphazardly, like, where do I find these people who might want to volunteer? But then I started thinking more strategically of like, where are the partnership potential? And I ended up getting in touch with the local university and they had a gerontology program studying, aging. And I thought, well, we're working with people who are aging. Like this is potentially good for service learning. And so I created a partnership with the local gerontology professor and they did a class project where over the class, the whole semester, we matched up his students with friendly visiting opportunities. So each student visited with an elderly person who agreed to be part of the program. And then, you know, they got to observe what this person's life was like and apply what they were learning in class to someone who was actually elderly. So that was a lot of students. That was a big learning curve in terms of what it takes to form a mutually beneficial partnership. You know, there were lots of things that I got out of that, but it was also just really creative and fun because I got to sort of, it was almost like being a matchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would match people's personalities and interests and what might be a good fit. Because I really wanted the companionship to not just meet a requirement on either side, but
right.
I really wanted them to like, I wanted them to like bond over something. So I love that part.
That's cool. I was also a volunteer coordinator when I was serving with Volunteer Maryland. And it same sort of thing. Like I started like picking off individuals and I'm like, all right, I'm going to be doing this for a long time if I need to. So what are some, let's go to the Girl Scouts. We have environmental stuff. We have oysters that we need to take care of. They need a badge, you know, hey. And I love that part of volunteer coordination. It's like, all right, who are the partnerships that I can make that I can get those individuals to match with their project. So during my service year, one of my challenges was actually at the beginning, my site supervisor, God love him, he's running an organic farm right now. I was a volunteer coordinator, but he was like, I want you at your desk from 8 in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday through Friday. I was like, bro, like my tears are like out in the park. Like I need to be out there. So that was like one of my challenges. My site supervisor retired and I got a new one and I was able to get out of my chair, which made my service year a lot easier. But what was something, and also like getting metrics for environmental projects is just really difficult. So what were some of the things that you were challenged with a little bit during your service year?
Definitely a lot of things that I was challenged with. I think that it was really eye-opening in terms of just how bureaucracies function or don't function. there were a lot of interesting scandals going on at the time. I feel like I always think, like, I remember my very, just to go off on a tangent for a second, my very first job ever, like, paid W-2 job was working for a craft store, a big box craft store. And my very first day on my very first job, I was trained by a young woman, you know, was a teenager, was not much older than me. And she asked me during my first shift, "Do you like to steal?" And I was like, this feels like a trick question. Like, is there a candid camera? Like, what's going on? But no, she just, and we were just standing there, like, at the register. This wasn't, like, hidden anywhere. And she was, like, asking me about it. And she told me how she really liked to steal things. And
okay. So,
yeah, I was a new person. I guess she wanted to confess everything to me. And so then I watched her steal an Afghan on her very first, like, on my first day. Like, I watched her just put it under her coat and walk out the door with it.
Oh my gosh.
I can still visualize it. Like, it was such an imprint on me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was just put in this ethical dilemma, you know, from day one, that was like, you're the new person. You have no credibility. Like, do I say something? If so, who do I say something to? And like, yeah, so I did. I ended up writing a letter to the manager. She ended up getting fired. Her sister worked there, so it was super awkward, and she would still come and like stand out the window and stare at me.
Oh, I hope that she found the mental health support that she needed.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was definitely, I feel like I tend to be a bit of an optimistic, you know, the work, people are generally doing the right thing, like, you know, not totally Pollyanna-ish, but a bit leaning that way, you know, where I assume that people are going to do the right thing for the right reasons and all of that. And then I feel like every work experience I've had has woken me up a little bit more to like, that's not always true. So
yeah.
So I give that context to say that there were some things going on totally unrelated to my service, but in the same office.
Yeah. And sometimes it just creeps in and you're like, I just want to do my work.
Yeah. So there was a high stakes embezzlement scandal that happened in the department. Like, people just down the hall from me who ended up getting, you know, they went through a lawsuit and this whole thing, like right around the same time. So that was among, you know, the conversations I was overhearing at the office was like, what was going on with that? A lot of, you know, infighting and drama and stuff that happens in an office that was interesting to observe as like a baby public servant coming into the world, being a little naive and a very optimistic, like, oh, these people must all just, you know, really want to help and show up every day with the best intentions and everything. And then you realize that there are great people that I worked with, and it, you know, it's not all rosy and above board every day.
And I will say that, like, those are some of the benefits of AmeriCorps, right? Is that, like, then you start to learn, how do I deal with conflict that happens in the workplace that doesn't have anything to do with me, but it does impact just me wanting to go to the office and be around people. And you know, it's nice during the service year. I don't know if you were part of a cohort or anything, or if you're kind of a lone wolf, but generally in AmeriCorps, you can go back to your program and talk things through, and you have support. And like, when you just jump into a job, you just don't have that anymore. You know what I mean? Or you just don't have it. And I liked that. Like, I could go to my program manager and say, yo, like, he's not letting me leave I gotta go recruit volunteers. And so she would give me some language about how to connect with him. And heck, I was in my 30s. Like, I should have known how to do this stuff, but I didn't, you know? So it sounded like some of that experience for you helped kind of, you know, when you get it early on too, and you get these lessons and you start to mature in your work and the way you do things, it's like, yeah, I've seen that, done that. I boundary, like, I'm just going over here, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely great. I was a lone wolf in terms of, I was the only member at my site, and it was a new site. However, it was a cohort program, and I did benefit from being able to go and ask those questions of the program director back at the main AmeriCorps program. And she is someone who I now still have as a mentor to this day. So yeah,
love
definitely
that. I love how that
strong relationships.
That's so good. I love how that happens where we're like, yeah, we're still actually my program manager. I became director of the program that I served in, Volunteer Maryland. And I did that without very much training and without very much staff. So I reached out to her and I was like bawling. I'm like, I don't know how to do a budget. Like, I don't know how to open e-grants. I don't know how to do any of this. And she came in for like almost 4 weeks and worked on a contract and sat with me and walked me through everything. So it's really interesting how those things just come full circle. And again, that's part of the reason for this podcast. And also, if we're thinking about recruiting for programs, like alumni are the best voice pieces to do that. So anyways, well, we're going to get stuck in your service year. So you did a whole bunch of stuff after your service year. How did you get to what you're doing now as an entrepreneur, running two businesses? And like, how did you get from there to here? I'm sure it was not a straight road. If it was, please give us the equation.
No, it was not a straight road, though there was an interesting moment in my service year that ended up being really pivotal later on. I didn't know it at the time, but so I mentioned that I left college not knowing what I wanted to do. And that is because I truly believe that I hadn't seen it yet. I was like, there is some kind of career out there for me. I'm sure of it, but I don't think I know it. And I remember, you know, everyone asks like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And people are saying like doctor and firefighter and lawyer. And I was like, I think I want to be one of those things that doesn't have any of those titles that are like on Sesame Street. Like I am some other thing that I'm sure exists. So I knew that and I didn't know what it was. And then my supervisor, site supervisor, I think she didn't really know what to do with me because I had a lot of energy and a lot of ideas. And so she needed a way to like, let me run myself out, you know, like,
yeah,
get out of the office and like get out of her hair and like go learn something. And so she was very, very supportive. If I wanted to go to other meetings happening at the county, if I wanted to go to trainings happening, she was like, yeah, go, go, go. So I went to a meeting that I'm sure had nothing to do with my service, but it was something in the government, in local government. And all I remember about it was that there was a woman at the front of the room who was writing on a flip chart and she had sticky notes and she was organizing people's ideas and synthesizing things and coordinating. And it was like one of those, you know, light bulb moments. It's like, something shined. I was like, I don't know what that's called, but that's what I want to do with the rest of my life. And so
I love that.
After the meeting, I cornered her just kind of like how I had at the museum, but I was like, what is this called and how do you make that a career? The answer wasn't as straightforward as if you want to be a doctor or a lawyer or something. Those are hard to do, but at least the path is clear. If you want to be what turned out to be a facilitator or a organizational development consultant, there's not a clear path to that.
Right.
So she recommended that I go to graduate school and she helped connect me. And again, she's still a mentor to this day. She's someone I stay in touch with. So that is what I ended up doing was after my AmeriCorps service term ended, I was actually offered a job at the department. And so I started this job. However, 6 months into that job was when the big crash happened with the housing market and all the
I was like, which crash?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, a lot has happened since then, but yeah, this was like late 2000s before like 2000, 2009. So I lost the job because they cut a bunch of stuff. Short-lived. So I used that as an opportunity to go back to grad school and studied organizational development and knowledge management and worked for another local government as a volunteer at a volunteer center. So stayed in the field. And a lot of other things happened along the way, but I'll skip to the point where when I finished grad school, I also didn't know how to get into the job that I wanted. I at least by then knew what I wanted to do, but I wasn't sure how you actually do that. And so every time there's a big pivot point, I tend to be the person who just sort of jumps off and says, let's do some sort of big move and see how it.
We have a lot in common.
Yeah. I'm like, maybe it'll help if I just push myself off a cliff and see where I land.
Exactly.
So at the time I was still with the boyfriend that I moved to Flagstaff with. So we decided to sell everything we owned and we moved into our car and we decided to live out of our car for a year and drive around the US and Canada.
Wow. What kind of car was it?
A RAV4.
Okay. I mean, it's got a little room. I'm picturing I had a Honda Civic and not the new ones. It was like a 1990 something year old. So whenever I think about like being young and having a little car. So that's cool. So you just decided, hey, I'm gonna just take this experience and run with it. One of the things I wanted to circle back to, just at least note, is exactly what you said, was that I knew that I wanted something, but I hadn't seen it yet. And one of the biggest things that I advise AmeriCorps members towards the end of their service year, once they've gotten their bearings and they kind of understand like what they've been doing through their service year, is go on LinkedIn. And I've said this 100 times, I'm not sponsored by LinkedIn, but I need to be. Go on LinkedIn and look at people's jobs, look at how they talk about their jobs, look at the language that they use, and then start using that language or building those skills or whatever during your service year. Like, that's what it's for. And you can even do that like after your AmeriCorps year, if you're looking to pivot, like you said, into different careers. Language is key when you're looking for some of these job things. So anyways, I just wanted to like give that piece of advice.
Yeah.
So yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah. And I think that I also use moments that don't turn out the way I think they're going to, like losing my job after 6 months. And I firmly do not believe that things happen for a reason. I know a lot of people do. I don't believe that things happen for a reason. And I do believe that you have an opportunity to make what you can out of everything that comes your way. So yep. I try to look at, you know, okay, I lost my job. What is this opportunity that's presenting itself now? And the opportunity was, well, there's nothing tying me to Flagstaff now. So I could go anywhere in the country to go to grad school. And, you know, my husband had lost, well, he's now my husband. Spoiler alert, boyfriend. Yay! Became husband. He's also an AmeriCorps.
AmeriCorps love.
Yeah. Yep, he did 3 terms of AmeriCorps too. So
okay, we'll have to have him on the podcast too.
Yeah, so he and I were both free, you know. It was like we were both jobless, but that also meant we were both free and we were able to move and make things happen. So yeah, we lived out of our car for a year. I decided to put a spin on it, which was that we decided we would volunteer somewhere different every week. And then we would blog about it. So I called the blog Service Driven. And we volunteered in like 50 different places and got to try all kinds of different things.
Wow. Is the blog still alive?
It does still exist. I don't pay for the URL anymore, but I can try to get you the link. Yeah.
Yeah. That's very cool. That's so neat. What maybe like a highlight of the trip or volunteer activity that you guys did?
Yeah, I think one of the volunteer highlights was volunteering for the Bob Marshall Wilderness Foundation, which is in Montana. My husband had done trail crew before as a service member, but my service was not hands-on outdoor in that way. But doing the trail work with Bob Marshall Wilderness Foundation was a little taste of like what it would have been like to be a trail crew service member, because we were out there in the wilderness for almost a week and we were using crosscut saws and clearing trails of down trees and there were lots of bears and it was just a really wildernessy experience. So
wait, you saw bears?
We saw bears and then we saw lots of evidence of bears as well.
Of bears. Okay.
Because I was scared because they have grizzly bears up there. And like, I grew up with black bears. I can handle a black bear, but the grizzlies freak me out. And we were actually in an area that was a grizzly bear study area. So they had barbed wire tied on the trees so that it would pull some of their hair when they rubbed their back on the tree. So we were seeing like tufts of grizzly bear hair all over and grizzly bear scat. And, you know, so I knew they were around, but luckily I only saw black bears on that trip. But
oh my God. So I took an Arctic geography class. My degree is in environmental studies. And the guy who taught the class, the professor, he had spent like a couple of years in Alaska doing his research. And you cannot leave your tent or igloo or wherever they stay without a gun. Because if you see a grizzly or a polar bear, you're dead because they're so fast. And so, and then there's also a really, there's a Chronicles of Lewis and Clark. It's the funniest book. It's not the funniest book, but there's parts of it that are very funny. And their first encounter with a grizzly bear, because these were all English guys. And so they saw, like you said, I can handle a black bear, but they didn't know what a grizzly bear was. So it's actually a very funny part of the book. But so, oh my gosh, that's kind of cool and crazy all at the same time. I'm glad you made it out. We're glad you're here.
Yeah. I would say on the personal, you know, highlight side, kind of comes from a low light, a thorn and then a rose, which was that when we started the trip, we crossed the country from Virginia to California in 2 weeks. We had set aside a year. We were planning on a year. And then we just like sped across the country real fast.
Done.
And my husband now, Jay, he was saying, this is not what I was expecting. Like, we need to go slower. We need to spend more time outside. You know, he had ideas of what he wanted. And I was more the, let's accomplish things, you know, like.
Yeah.
And so it was a real, he was more in his element, going with the flow. And he's very much, you know, a person who likes to make it up as you're going along and go on adventures and things like that. So it was really me getting used to the comfort of not knowing where we were going next and letting things evolve as they went. So there was that whole shift that happened. And then week six of our trip, we were in Death Valley National Park, and it was a beautiful, beautiful day. And we had camped, like we drove in on this four-wheel drive only road and camped next to our car in this beautiful canyon area. And gorgeous sunset, we're like having the best time, he's making dinner. And all of a sudden this freak gust of wind comes through the canyon and it picked up our camp stove and it threw boiling water from the camp stove onto my husband's back. Yeah. And so he ended up getting second degree burns, scalded over 6% of his body. And
wow,
I had to use, you know, my limited first aid knowledge to try to figure out how bad was it? Did we need to evacuate? Like, what level of evacuation did we need to do?
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, sort of short story, the full story is on the blog, but short story is that we did have to evacuate and I had to drive out in the dark on this four-wheel drive only road, try not to pop a tire, which they had warned us. The road was like famous for having these rocks that would pop your tires. And so it was like the slowest high stakes evacuation ever because we're like creeping along. It was pretty funny. And we had no cell service. So yeah, so we had to go out and he eventually got to where we could call for an ambulance, and he ended up with two ambulance rides back to Las Vegas, and we ended up at Las Vegas in the middle of the night at the burn unit and had to get him care. So,
oh my gosh, that's crazy.
And that was week six of a year long trip.
Did you call it? I mean, did you guys really do it for a full year? Like, holy, I would have been like, I'm done.
Yeah, we took a month off. And we recuperated a week in Vegas and then 3 weeks back at his parents' house in Arizona. And then we got back on the road and we nicknamed him Wolverine because his skin heals so quickly. So,
oh, nice.
He did.
That's great.
Yeah, he healed completely. He didn't have to have skin grafts or anything. But yeah.
Wow.
An unexpected turn for sure.
Wow. So taking a year off and traveling the country kind of reset kind of reset. It sounds like it also solidified the relationship. Like,
yeah, after a lot of drama, like yeah, there was a exactly. lot of fighting. There was a lot of, I mean, you're in a pressure cooker. You're in this small space yeah. with each other. We came up with good coping mechanisms, though. It was yeah. like, so I have low blood sugar, you know, like I'm the classic person who gets really hangry. Mm-hmm. And so we started carrying those squeezable applesauce pouches, which are like meant for toddlers, but they're also useful if you're having yeah. a meltdown while you're driving. So we yeah. would like put them, stash them around the car. And if I was getting upset, he would ask, you know, do you need to go squeeze? And I was like, yes.
So. That's so funny. That's great. Oh my gosh, such good stuff. It sounds like you've had such great adventures. I do want to talk about some of your products and let's talk about, you know, your work that you're doing with AmeriCorps programs and kind of how this whole idea of do good, be good happened. And then we can talk about some of the tools that you have.
Yeah. I mean, bringing it full circle, it's actually a surprisingly good transition because we were out on the road for like week 50, starting to wonder what we were going to do with our lives. And my former mentor, who I had mentioned, I'm still in touch with, who ran the AmeriCorps program where I served, she just called me up out of the blue one day and was like, are you still living out of your car? I said, yes. This is the good thing about keeping a blog, by the way, because everybody knows yeah. that you're living out of your
what
car.
What are you doing? Yeah.
So she said, well, I have a proposition for you. I really need someone to fill in because we have someone who had to take leave. And I'm wondering if you'd come work for our AmeriCorps program for 6 months while you figure out your next step. And it just, you know, it did feel very serendipitous. So I said yes. And we moved, that was back here in Flagstaff. So we came back to Flagstaff and I ran the program for 5 years because the need continued beyond 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, to speak about recruitment, like, the program that I ran was one of the largest programs in Arizona, and we had a large recruitment effort. In fact, when I started, we were only at maybe 50% recruitment for the cycle because they had had a staffing issue. People were out. So that was like the first thing. I hit the ground running and they're like, you need to recruit. You need to get to 100% recruitment. Forget about everything else. Like, that is your only yeah. job. And what I discovered was that I really loved that part of it. I especially love matching people. It's like a puzzle to me. I love finding the right fit. And mm-hmm. we had a program where we had lots of different kinds of positions in lots of different sites. And so I enjoyed, it was sort of like a mini temp agency or staffing agency where yeah. I got to match people up with like, what's going to be the best fit. So I really love that element. And it gave me tons of great insights into what works and what doesn't that I then use today, now that I work with programs all over the country and help them with recruitment.
Yeah, that was when I was the director of Volunteer Maryland. So I kind of got to do whatever, like whatever I was interested in kind of thing, and then also keep the lights on and figure out the budget. But I did enjoy recruitment very much. So I loved just getting to know people. There were a couple times where I knew this candidate was going to be amazing and sites were like, no, no, no. And I'm like, bro, like this person needs to serve in AmeriCorps. And sure enough, whenever I would place them or whenever they'd finally get placed at the place they were supposed to be, it always blossomed into like a wonderful partnership. And so many, it's just so neat. Again, this is like, that's like my driver for this podcast as well. Cause like, I started a LinkedIn group with those folks and really helped them, like many of them, try to find their next best opportunity. So that is such a fun piece for sure. And yeah, so you're working with other AmeriCorps programs and commissions, right? Throughout the state. I mean, yeah. Throughout the country.
Yeah. So far we've worked with, I was just looking at our stats. We've worked with over 150 different AmeriCorps programs and more than 20 state commissions. So yeah, we're definitely nationwide at this point, and we're actually updating. We have a little map where we keep track of what states we've worked in. We're working on updating it right now. So hopefully one day we'll be able to say we've worked in every state. We're getting close, but we're not quite there yet.
That's awesome. Well, what do you want to talk about first? Do you want to highlight the recruitment stuff, or do you want to look at some of the, just broadly what you all do?
Yeah, well, I think I can kind of quickly say broadly, we work on recruitment and retention. You know, always make sure people know we don't do grant writing. We don't do program evaluation. We don't do anything with, you know, stuff that's very in the weeds of the grant stuff. We work with the human side of like helping people recruit those great AmeriCorps members and then get them to stick around and be satisfied with their service term. So the two things that we're actually launching in May, which we've done a few cycles of, we've done it for 2 years now, is something called Recruitment Support Group and Level Up Your Recruitment. And these came out of what we heard when we were working with programs, which is that one, this is a really difficult time to recruit. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things happening in, you
the
know,
ethers.
Yeah. Meta trends, you know, are not going the way of making recruitment easier. So the problem is that even if intellectually, you know, this is a difficult time, there's a lot of stuff like the economy and housing costs and stuff that make it hard, it doesn't make it any more frustrating. Like, it doesn't make it less frustrating
for
the person who's trying to recruit. You know, it's hard to not take it personally.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we decided to start the recruitment support group, was a lot of people are a organization of one, or at least they're the only person who does recruitment, you know?
Right.
So people don't, they don't even know, like, is this normal or is this that I'm failing at this, you know? And sometimes it's a small change that could help them. A lot of times there's small things that they could be doing that would at least reduce their stress, if not actually get their numbers up. So that's really where we put our effort, is this, it's a 5-week program. People come in and they get that cohort experience that a lot of AmeriCorps members get, where now you get to be in a cohort of your peers. Everybody's in this together. We say, you know, recruitment really does need to be a team sport, because it's very challenging, and you need that outside perspective sometimes on what's working and what's not.
I think something that can be beneficial to that idea as well, it's really good to know what other opportunities are out there. You know, of course you're trying to recruit for your program, but if the person's not a good fit, or they just are like, I actually really want to work in the environmental stuff or whatever, for us to know what opportunities are out there helps us, like you said, like it takes a village to raise an AmeriCorps member, right? Like it takes all of us to share the abundance and the resources and the opportunities to have people take on these service projects or service opportunities, which in turn just makes the program stronger, the larger AmeriCorps stronger, and the AmeriCorps connections even better, right? That's amazing. So when does that cohort kick off, and how could people get involved in that?
Yeah, it kicks off May 6th. And the deadline to join is April 30th. So it's coming right up. People can go to our website, dogoodbegood.us. We've got more information there. We have a robust email. I don't know what to call it, email system. I don't know. We send out emails twice a week. One email is always training content, so like helping people with tips and resources on recruitment and retention. And then if we do have something coming up, then we'll announce that in the second email of the week. So people can go to our website and sign up for the email list as well, and they'll get all those updates. I'll also be at the conference, but I don't know if it's coming up before that. So,
gotcha. And then that was dogoodbegood.us.
Yes.
Gotcha. And then they can sign up for the newsletter and get some free resources, but then also look at some other services that might support their program, recruitment and also their program.
Yeah. And we do have a YouTube channel as well, because we've been trying to build out some free resources on there, you know, training clips on specific issues. So if, for example, you know, like there's a lot of tech that's now used in recruitment. How do you use a QR code on your flyer? How do you, you know, set up your brand kit on Canva, things like that. Mm-hmm. So we've been creating little training clips on our YouTube channel that will help people with very specific issues that they want to know more about.
Very cool. And that's just Do Good, Be Good?
Yes. Yeah. YouTube, You could be good. The other one that we are doing at the same time, so they start the same time, they have the same deadline, is level up your recruitment. And this came out of realizing that there really aren't a lot of resources out there for someone who's actually already been doing recruitment for a while. They already know the basics. Like, all the recruitment trainings tend to focus on the basics.
Yeah.
So if you're already doing the basics and you really want to streamline things or make your systems work better, automate things, or, you know, start doing strategic partnerships, or, you know, some of these kind of higher level skills, there weren't any resources out there. So that's what Level Up Your Recruitment is about. Is it's same model where it's a 5-week cohort style program, but it's for people who want to be with a peer group that is looking at those higher level skills.
And does some of the automation, because automation is huge, like once I figured out some automation for this podcast, it made it so much easier, except for it'd be sometime in the middle of the day. And then I'm like, I have an interview, you know, so I had to fix those little adjustments on Calendly. But do you introduce like tools for automating, you know, some of the outreach and some of the feedback and stuff that they get?
We do. In the Level Up group, we go on a deep dive into that, because that is what most people are looking for, is how do they save time? So maybe they're already doing what they want to do and they don't need to change things drastically, but it's like, yeah, but how do we do this without burning out? Like, how do we actually make our lives easier? So that's systems building and automation are a big part of Level Up Your Recruitment. I am also talking about it at the conference. I'm doing a tech tools session, and we just sent out an email to our email list this week with some of those recommendations of tech tools. So we also include a lot of that in our email newsletter as well.
And the conference you're talking about is the America Service Commission's conference, and that's in Minnesota?
Yeah, Minneapolis, right? Minnesota.
And that, I think it's, what, I don't even know what day of the week it is today.
It's next week.
Yes, the week of the 22nd. And that is always such a fun conference where programs from all over the country come together and commissions come together. And this will be the first year in a long time that I haven't gone. So have fun for me. My goal is to hopefully be there next year and be promoting the podcast and some other fun things that I'm working on in the back end. But okay, so the two offerings are, number one, the cohort. And what is that called?
Recruitment Support Group.
Recruitment Support Group. And then the other one is Level Up Your Recruitment. So if you're already kind of like, yeah, I'm good, I have my own personal care, when I know when I'm not getting any applications coming in, like I have my lavender pillow I put on my face and I feel better about myself, but I could probably use some just leveling up some of my recruitment. So, and all of those, the deadline is April 30th, and we'll definitely get this out before then. So awesome. Yeah. Can you provide, we've got to give them a little taste of the Do Good, Be Good resources. So can you give them one tip on how to like self-care about like, or I guess how to break limiting beliefs in recruitment, or so the kind of the support group aspect, and then what is one easy tip that a program person could take right now off this podcast and implement it and it would change their life? Don't give them away the whole thing.
All right. So on the limiting belief side, I'll say one thing that we hear a lot is, well, the cost of housing and the low cost of the living allowance, you know, are just prohibitive to people. They can't join AmeriCorps because of that. And I think that it's important that we allow ourselves to do a both and in this situation, because people are, you know, passionate about trying to make the system more equitable and create better access. And so I think we can do both. I think we can acknowledge that the costs of being an AmeriCorps member are too high, and that we also need to increase the living allowance, while also recognizing that there are ways to make it work as it is now for many people. And there's ways to lower barriers even today, even if we can't necessarily change some of the things we want to change. Like, we can't control the real estate market. And we can look at, you know, what are some other barriers that we are within our locus of control, if you will. So we talk a
Love
lot
that.
about like helping them understand what's within their control to change, try to help people feel empowered to make the changes that they can and accept the changes that they can't.
Love that. I live by those rules like every day. Can I do anything about this? No. Do I want to do something about this? Yes, but can I? No. So let's focus on something I can control. Love that. Love that. Love that. And then what's one thing that's a program could do that would change their recruitment, level up their recruitment?
Yeah.
Just one.
I was tempted to say use ChatGPT, but I know there's a lot of people who are not allowed by their organization or something. So I don't want to do that one. So that's cheap. But the one that I'll offer that hopefully everyone can do is to reach out to somebody who's not you and not your staff and ask them to be a tester for you of both your marketing and your application process. So have them start at the beginning. You know, how would they find out about you? Show them the flyer, show them the Instagram post, whatever it is, and have them need to follow all the steps that it would take to go through that process and give you feedback on what they observed along the way.
I love that. I think we had talked about that before we even jumped on this. And, you know, sometimes we think, I don't have time to do that. Well, if there's a broken link in there, then like, you've got to make it the priority. It's like, whenever I finish my cardio and weights and I'm like, I don't really want to do core. I mean, if you're not working on your core, like what, it's no good, right? I think that's a great piece of advice. So have somebody that's not yourself go out and start from the beginning of like where they find your program all the way up to an interview and being accepted. That's brilliant. So these are the kind of things that you'll get in the leveling up programming with Do Good, Be Good. Deadline's April 30th for that.
Yes.
And then also the recruitment support group, April 30th, if you need some people around you to support the pressures. So Sharon, this has been so wonderful. And now you get to listen to it again and edit it. Is there anything else that you want the listeners to know? And then I have a kind of a tweaked question that's a little bit different than what I usually ask. So you're going to be my guinea pig with this.
The other thing I'd like the listeners to know is that our Do Good, Be Good team is not just me. We've got Dana and Michaela and Betsy, and we've got a lot of great guest instructors as well that have been in with us for a while, like Karina and Jamia. And everyone has that connection to AmeriCorps. So everyone who works for us, we are a private company. We're not a nonprofit. We're not government, but we're made up of AmeriCorps alumni. And I'm not hiring right this minute, but if that's the kind of thing you want to do and you want to reach out and introduce yourself, I'm always keeping a roster in the back of my mind of other great AmeriCorps alumni who might be able to come onto our team at some point. So,
yeah, thank you for that. I love that your whole team and everybody's been so wonderful and helpful on supporting this podcast. So that's great. Yes, reach out to Sharon and the Do Good, Be Good team. Okay, so what would be something that your now self would want your AmeriCorps self to know? And I did not ask her ahead of time, so we're going to give Sharon a little bit of time to think about that. So your now self talking to your AmeriCorps self with all the controversies.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, part of me wants to question the question in the sense that I think sometimes you have to learn things in good time. You know, I think there were things that certainly I didn't know then that would have been helpful to know. But if I was just like whispering in my own ear back then, I don't know if I would have been ready to take in that advice or like ready to implement it. So, I mean, certainly things I've learned about setting boundaries, things I've learned about how to just have enough confidence in yourself that you don't need to prove yourself. Like, I think that's a hard part for young people who are doing something they're passionate about, who want to do a good job. You know, a lot of us are in that high achieving personality type, and we get in our own way about just coming in guns blazing, like, I'm going to do all the things, you know? And sometimes that's coming from an insecurity, you know, that's coming from a like, I don't know if I really know what I'm doing. And so I'm just going to like really come out, you know, at full speed, and I feel like I'm rambling, but I think you get the idea that like that spinning out that happens when you're young and highly motivated, really want to do good, but you don't yet know how that gets done. And I'm very grateful now at my age that that's something that I feel like has calmed down more. Like I'm okay saying, yes, I'll do this. No, I won't do this. Yes, I know I'm good at this. No, I'm gonna step away and let somebody else take this other piece. So it's something that comes with age and experience that I'm very grateful for.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's almost like not knowing what you don't know, right? Like you just don't know what you don't know until you realize you didn't know it, right? And that is, I think that does come with passing of time. And I think what you're speaking to also is that like kind of whispering to your AmeriCorps self, like it's gonna all turn out fine. You're good. Like it's all gonna turn out fine. So this was so great, Sharon. It was so good to have you on the other end of this. Usually Sharon's editing when I'm interviewing other people, so it'll be fun. And we'll be back with another AmeriCorps Connections special series on recruitment. So please let me know in the comments, share this, like this. It actually like does stuff for the podcast and for YouTube. It boosts up the algorithms and we just get more notice. And that's what we want right now, especially right now with recruitment. So please, please, please share, comment if this was important, if you enjoyed this. Go to dogoodbegood.us to find the opportunity, all kinds of opportunities, but upcoming April 30th deadline for AmeriCorps recruitment support group and level up your recruitment. So Sharon, thank you so much. And we'll see y'all next week with another AmeriCorps Connections interview. See ya.
Thank you, Nikki.